empowered physically, mentally, and spiritually.
This is the people's war. It is our war. We are the fighters. Fight it then. Fight it with all that is in us. And may God defend the right.
Warning, warning.
They're going to kill us all.
See how the trouble you've started?
Be they the government, be they industry, be they organized labor, be they anyone. Or you can be.
Time when the operation of gene becomes so orient, makes you so sick at heart that you can't take part. You can't even passively take part. And you've got to put your bodies upon the gears and upon the wheels, upon the levers, upon all the apparatus. You've got to make it stop. And you've got to indicate to the people who run it, to the people who own it, that unless you're free, the machine will be prevented from working at all.
Revolution Radio of FreedomSlips.com, the number one listener-supported talk radio station, throwing ourselves upon the gears of the machine. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
You called down the thunder, well now you've got it.
Rick, your mind's coming, and hell's coming with me, you hear? Hell's coming with me!
Revolution Radio!
All right. Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Well, thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. I'm your host, Darren. I call my little show Apocalyptic 1-to-1. Keith AZ's under the weather. So if you've tuned in to listen to Keith, he's not available this evening. I'm sorry. Stuck with me. I've been talking the last couple hours about the passing of Gonzalo Lira. I liked Gonzalo Lira. He was a flawed man, but he was a friend. An enemy of my enemy is my friend, is the saying. And Gonzalo Lira was a friend. In this battle with dark forces in our world, you know, if you've ever listened to my little show before, Apocalyptic 1-to-1 with me, Darren, last week I played a clip from the health professional who at one point in his dissertation said, I will die for what I believe in, what I know to be true. I will die for what I know is right. That's how I feel about it. If the time comes, if it's necessary to leave this life, to have this life taken from me for what I believe to be right and to be true, so be it. If you stand for nothing, you will fall for anything. I respect integrity. I respect sincerity and integrity. I love those quotes. I love those things. Decency, honesty. These are things I hold sacred. Character, good character. To do the wrong thing for the sake of some kind of self-preservation, we leave this life eventually, whether we like it or not. And if we don't have any integrity, It's an absolute travesty. They say the coward dies 1,000 deaths. Brave man dies one time. Do you understand the point I'm trying to make? As these totalitarians, as these tyrants, these wannabe tyrants, these Caligula wannabes, as they mount their assault, as they come against us, as they try to bring their plans into fruition, I've no fear whatsoever. Because I have a conscience. And I'm going to do what I believe to be right. And I won't be shaken. It's just the way it is. And I'm stubborn like that. My friend Gonzalo Lira has been killed. He's let to die. Rest in peace, my friend Gonzalo Lira. I'm going to get back to this clip I was playing. There's just a little bit left. A friend of Gonzalo's, sharing memories of Gonzalo.
Be 30 minutes. About how great it is to be a parent and his children, how much he loves his children. And that's what we would talk about after we did a live stream, to be honest. And yeah, that's it. All right, let's just talk about topics in the news. Rest in peace, Gonzalo. And you will be missed. So, I've got some news topics in no specific order. I'm not very well prepared today, to be quite honest. But I'll just read through some of these bookmarks that I have, and just to keep everyone updated on the craziness of the world. Let's see here. The ECB chief Lagarde, she says that Trump is a threat to Europe. Interesting. Comment from Christine Lagarde. Let me find her quote here. If we draw lessons from history, by which I mean to say the manner in which he, Trump, carried out the first 4 years of his mandate, it is clearly a threat. That's what Lagarde said. Christine Lagarde. For which I say the real threat here is Christine Lagarde, not Trump. So, yeah. We had more strikes from what I read. The Biden White House, they sent some more missiles into Yemen. This is what I talked about yesterday. Not going to deter Yemen or the Houthis. These strikes from the U.S. are not going to do much of anything for Yemen or the Houthis. We're talking about some very battle-ready, battle-hardened people that the U.S. is trying to intimidate. Not going to work, but the Biden White House is going to have to continue to escalate because he's trapped now. They have no choice. In order to save face and not look weak, they're going to have to continue to escalate with Yemen. And on the other side, you have the neocons who are going to be pushing that late with Yemen in order to get a conflict with Iran. So once again, Biden's foreign policy has boxed in the United States and the UK because the UK just seems to follow the United States into any misguided adventure they move towards. And so, you know, they're going to be bogged down now in the Middle East. I don't see how they can get an off ramp now. But that's the situation in Yemen. And, they can't stop. The Biden White House can't stop. I was reading this morning that they're now going to be sending javelins, I believe, to Kosovo, the breakaway province of Kosovo. I read something like that in my Twitter feed. I didn't have much time to really get into it. But this is a huge escalation. They're not starting to arm Kosovo, obviously, to antagonize Serbia. We just can't stop, man. And out of control White House. An out of control White House. That's really its entire foreign policy is now just based on escalation, war, intimidation. There's no strategy. There's no thinking. There's no diplomacy. It's just none of that. It's just brutal. It's a hammer, and everything is a freaking nail. That's the Biden White House foreign policy, and it's going to lead the U.S. to a catastrophic situation. This is not going to end well for the U.S. this type of policy. But you know, we have a year left of Biden, so maybe we can make it through the year, and something better can come along. What else here? There's going to be protests tomorrow in Cyprus against the British base that they have here, where they're launching airstrikes against Yemen. So, you know, I don't know if it's my imagination. I really don't. Maybe I'm imagining this, but I can hear in the mornings. I feel like I can hear the planes, the fighter jets, the military activity. I don't know. Maybe it's in my head. But it's Cyprus, and they're launching a lot of attacks from the base in Cyprus. And they're going to be protesting that base, because there really shouldn't be a British base, to be quite honest. That British base needs to go, and it needs to be returned to the people of Cyprus. But that's just my opinion. And what else? Sunak was in Kiev. So Sunak is launching a war against Yemen. And what does he do? He commits the UK. This guy really isn't elected. He really isn't an elected prime minister. Am I right? People watching in the UK, not an elected prime minister. But anyway, he decides to start bombing Yemen. And as he's bombing Yemen, this guy, Sunak, this freaking guy decides to travel to Kiev and give the Zelensky regime £2.5 billion. And he's going to give them all kinds of drones and air defense. And he made all kinds of statements. I think I even bookmarked one of the statements. Let me see. I don't even know if it's worth reading at this point, because it's just such nonsense. Yeah, Sunak was in Kiev. He said Ukraine is not alone and Ukraine will never be alone. Putin might think that he can outlast us, but he is wrong. We stand with you today, tomorrow, for as long as it takes. Blah, 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 blah. Yeah, we're going to outlast Putin for as long as it takes. And Russia thinks they can outlast us, but they can't outlast us. We can outlast you longer. It's like some sort of pissing contest that they've imagined in their head, right? Like 15-year-old boys that would have these little, when you were a teenager, you'd have these pissing contests and see who's cooler and who's tougher and who can piss longer. I mean, these freaking leaders are children, man. They really are children. We're going to outlast the Russians. How are you going to outlast the Russians, you malaka? How are you going to outlast the Russians? Really? The UK, you're going to outlast the Russians? Is that what you're trying to sell everyone on, Sunak? Yeah, Sunak's going to outsmart Putin. Lavrov, Zakharova. Medvedev, give me a break, man. Give me a freaking break. Anyway, that's the UK continuing to escalate. And, you know, I said this yesterday, the UK is a nose in escalate. They really should be careful. The UK is starting to open up a lot of different fronts. They're opening up a lot of different fronts now. And they really shouldn't be opening up a lot of different fronts. This is not what the UK should be doing. What Sunak should be doing is he should be giving that £2.5 billion to the people of Britain, not to the Zelensky regime. And he shouldn't be bombing Yemen. That's the last thing UK needs right now. Anyway, it's starting to rain here. So let me Let me wrap this up. Medvedev, by the way, he said any UK troops in Ukraine be considered an act of war, because Sunak is talking about security guarantees and stuff like that. He's going to provide Ukraine with security guarantees. Yeah, okay. Whatever, man. Anyway, that was Medvedev, his comments. And one more story. I'm not going to do a clown world today, and now the rain's coming down hard. One more story is it looks like the EU is moving towards a deal with Hungary so that Hungary could approve the 50 billion euros. And it looks like that deal is going to be what I talked about a week ago. They'll allow Hungary to opt out of giving money to Ukraine as long as Hungary votes yes for the 50 billion. Anyway, everybody, that is the video. The Duran, got locals. Duran merch. This is also Duran merch. I'll explain this hat another day. That's the video, everyone. Take care.
That's the real question. Understand what's going on.
Well, that was Gonzalo Lira's sign-off for the last few years. Understand what's going on. Another thing Gonzalo Lira would say, a lot of times when he opened his broadcasts the last couple of years, he'd say, where is Tiffany Dover? And probably like a lot of people, I didn't know who Tiffany Dover was, you know, so I Googled it. And Tiffany Dover was a nurse who at the beginning of the injection program, the big injection rollout, you know, they wanted to get everybody injected with this breakthrough technology, DNA infusing shot. Tiffany Dover was very active in social media. She had somewhat of a large following on the internet. She was a professional nurse. And they had a big press conference, and she got her special injection. And then she got up onto the podium to speak. And she passed out. She lost consciousness, hit the floor, they had to carry her away. And she never resurfaced. You know, she had all these platforms that she was so active on the internet. She never resurfaced. You know, months went by. You know, Tiffany Dover. What happened to Tiffany Dover? Where is Tiffany Dover? Then in her local paper, there was an obituary for a Tiffany Dover. So a lot of people in the conspiratorium, if you will, look, she's disappeared, and now there's an obituary here where she lives, where she resided. There's an obituary here with a woman named Tiffany Dover who's passed away. She was a married woman, and her husband seemed real incommunicado. He just didn't want to talk to anybody. So, yeah, Gonzalo would talk about the special injections in a less than favorable light. And Gonzalo Lira would talk about the Ukrainian war and had an opinion that was very contrary to that of the American media. And Gonzalo Lira was an American citizen who died in a Ukrainian jail for his speech. and the American government did nothing to help Gonzalo Lira. I'm sure many of you will remember we had a WNBA basketball player. Oh, I'm not going to remember her name. I think she got caught with pot in Russia and was arrested. And they worked out all kinds of diplomacy. They worked and worked, and they got her released. I think we traded a Russian prisoner we were holding for that basketball player that was being held for the possession of pot in Russia. I'm sure a lot of you remember that. So the United States State Department can step in on the behalf of American citizens, oftentimes secure their release, bring them home. Not Gonzalo Lira. Not him. Rest in peace, my friend Gonzalo Lira. Well, another thing, if you've ever listened to my little show, Apocalyptic 121, with me, Darren, I do play clips. I don't sit here and talk to you for 2 hours, because I have my opinions, I have my point of view, but I value so many of the speakers that I listen to. I value their opinions, and a lot of them don't get the exposure they should. I think a lot of Americans in particular learn what they learn from like Fox and NBC, CBS, ABC. Whereas I'm plugged in exclusively to the independent media. You know, I'm wholly reliant on the what you'd call the independent media for my information. I consider the legacy media, the mainstream, consider it a propaganda arm of our government. I truly do. I think it's not even a dispute at this point. It's really a propaganda wing of the leadership class, if you will. When they talk about misinformation, disinformation, they're talking about themselves. They don't want you to trust what your own eyes behold. They have this alternative reality they're pitching, and I prefer the real thing. I prefer harsh reality, true reality. That's my preference. That's all I'll go with. You know, these fictions, these sins in media, I've just no stomach for it at this point. You know, the Hegelian dialectic at work, the problem, reaction, solution. That's a classical communist tactic to lead us down that primrose path, to take you where they want to take you where they desire you to go. I prepare. I'm of a mind to see things for what they are, and not to be led by some ring through my nose, so to speak. There is a voice. I consider him a part of the establishment. Colonel Douglas McGregor, who has a contrarian point of view regarding the Ukrainian war. He's been saying for the longest time, Ukraine can't win. versus Russia, that they cannot. They're outgunned. They're outmanned. It's just simple math. You know, I've seen that supposed leader of Ukraine, Zelensky, prior to his political career, he was an entertainer. And without going into detail, he was engaged in some very risque, very off-color type entertainment. And I think that speaks to the character of the man, who the man is. The Ukrainian government is a charade. This has been a proxy war with the United States and Russia from the start, from the get-go. Zelensky's a sock puppet. It's such a farcical scenario. It's such an absurd and ridiculous charade that they're trying to sell regarding that conflict in Eastern Europe. Now, personally, I worry for the very existence of Israel. What's happening in Gaza is turning the entire world against Israel. The slaughter of women and children, the slaughter of innocents, unarmed civilians in Gaza, it's turning everyone against Israel. I don't long for the destruction of Israel. I do not. But that's the effect this war in Gaza is having on people's perception of Israel, that they're engaged in an act of genocide. Colonel Douglas McGregor, very rational voice.
Today I have Colonel Douglas McGregor with me to talk about the chaos going on in Europe with Putin and Ukraine. We're going to be drug into a Middle East conflict. Colonel McGregor, thank you so much for coming on today.
Sure, thanks.
So I've been reading that Volodymyr Zelensky of Ukraine is accusing Putin and Russia of being behind the Hamas attacks on Israel and that there needs to be an international investigation. Is this his way of continuing to demonize Putin? Or is he trying to pull Ukraine back into the media? Or do you think there's any truth to his accusations?
No, I don't see any truth in it. And I think he's trying desperately to do whatever he can to drag us back into the war, because he knows that he's effectively on the road to being abandoned. He knows the money is going to stop. The arms have already stopped. The ammunition isn't coming. He's at the end of his rope. So I think he's probably ready to do or say anything that promises to help him in any way.
Yeah. Okay. So by following your work and your contacts, we've learned the truth that millions, tens of millions of Ukrainians have fled Ukraine. They have no plan of returning to the country. 500,000 plus Ukrainian soldiers have been killed or injured. Yet the war continues, with Zelensky remaining confident that he can win. Is this Zelensky employing his acting skills, or does he actually believe he can beat Russia and Vladimir Putin?
No, I think he's more sober-minded than that. He's at the end, and he's going to say whatever he can to prop himself up to the bitter end. Who knows what sort of fate awaits him? I think there's a darn good chance that he may not survive in office. He's offended, aggravated, angered millions of Ukrainians. He's led them down the path to total disaster. That ends badly for the leader. And then, of course, he's probably got a number of escape routes planned to various places where his bank accounts and homes are located. But, you know, look, this war is over. You know, if you wanted any evidence for that, all you had to do was essentially look at the budget fight over the money. Suddenly now everyone who was pushing war with Russia in Ukraine is now pushing war with the world inside Gaza for Israel. So we've just essentially taken the same course, moved it to a different theater. They're singing the same kinds of tunes, hoping for a better outcome. I don't think the outcome is going to be good in either case, but, you know, that's another matter.
Do you think, or what would you guess NATO leaders are telling Zelensky behind the scenes? Do you think that they're saying, listen, we've supported you, we've given you more than enough, it didn't work out, and it's now time to get to the peace talk tables? Or do you think that they are still quietly behind the scenes pumping him up with confidence that he can win this thing?
I think he's probably being told privately that it's over and that he should probably step down graciously, which I don't think he can do, as I mentioned earlier, in favor of someone else stepping forward that the West can present as a credible representative of the remaining Ukrainian state, whatever that is, to sit down and negotiate some sort of end to the conflict with the Russians. I think any thoughts of turning Ukraine into the contemporary equivalent of Napoleon's Spanish ulcer for Russia are over. I don't think anybody thinks that that's possible. I also don't see much evidence that anybody in Europe wants that to happen. So, you know, we'll just have to watch. Now, I do see evidence that you still have some fighting. The Ukrainians are sort of clinging with their fingernails to the edge of the cliff, and the Russians are now pressing ahead. Anybody who thinks that the Russians are sitting still is wrong. This Avdiivka fight, which is sort of Bakhmut on steroids, I think is about over. After that, I'm not sure there's much left. Whatever Ukrainians are there that still constitute the army will want to retire to the Dnieper River and cross it and get out of the way. The question is entirely up to the Russians. What do they want to do? What are they going to demand? Are they going to offer any terms at all? To whom will they speak? They're certainly not going to pay any attention to anything we say. We've yet to tell the truth to them about anything. So the question is, who can step forward? I don't have that answer. I think they've got to wait, frankly, until there's some turnover in European governments and they have new leadership before they can expect anything from them. So, you know, the tragedy is not yet completely over, but for all intents and purposes, this is the end. In other words, this is similar to the situation that existed after we crossed the Rhine and the Soviets reached the outskirts of Berlin.
Okay. Well, Zelensky has also said that Putin is taking every opportunity to undermine Ukrainian democracy and elections. But isn't it Zelensky that's not allowing elections in order to keep himself in power?
Well, what do you want? I mean, the man's already said that there will be a change for the foreseeable future. He's effectively banned the Orthodox Christian Church from operating in Ukraine. I mean, just go down the Bill of Rights. Who has any rights left? I'm not sure there are many rights that cannot be discarded with impunity by him. He still has a substantial SBU or Ukrainian secret police behind him, which looks more and more like the NKVD under Stalin, rounding up people, forcing them into uniform or disappearing them, if you will. I wonder what's going to happen to this Gonzaga Lira, who is sitting in a Ukrainian jail because he was honest and told the truth about events on the ground in Ukraine. Apparently, he's simply being left to rot in prison. The State Department doesn't seem to be interested in the man, even though he's an American citizen. It's a very tragic situation. But, you know, that's a good warning for everybody, including people like me. What you can expect from this administration if you're in trouble.
Yeah, probably because Gonzalo Lira was not beating the drum that Washington, D.C. wanted. And so they're like, we're not going to back a journalist who isn't putting out the narrative that we demand, as if he was Twitter or Facebook or Google or something like that. Do you think that, you know, in the last couple of days, there's been multiple drone attacks on the capital of Ukraine? Do you think that Putin and the Russian Federation Army, have they been attacking the capital this whole time and it's just now coming into the news? Or is this something new as they try to get people to the peace talk tables? What do you think is going on there?
Well, they've launched attacks at targets that they could identify as having some military value or political military value. It's been episodic, but I think they're very definitely ratcheting up the pressure, because the Ukrainian forces are now actually defecting in large numbers. We've always had numbers of Ukrainian commanders that surrendered smaller units because they couldn't evacuate their wounded. They didn't want the wounded to die, and they knew that the Russians would provide them with better care. I mean, one of the problems inside the Ukrainian military from day one has been a very inadequate structure for medical treatment and evacuation. So that that much is persistent. I think they're ratcheting up the pressure because they're going to close in on Kiev. They're going to roll up to the Dnieper River. There's no question about it. There's not a whole lot out there to stop them. And I think they have hoped that someone would sober up in the West and step forward and say, let's talk. Enough's enough. You've won. Let's see what your terms are. But no one's done that. And until somebody does, there is no incentive for Russian forces on the ground to stop.
But from everything you've seen, is this, you know, NATO's been telling us, oh, you know, you watch, they'll go for the capital next. Then they'll roll into Poland and Eastern Europe. Or is this just the natural consequence of war that, hey, you know, in order to get someone to surrender, you go for the flag, you go for the capital?
Again, I think that is probably on everybody's mind right now in Moscow. But having said that, we've got to keep a certain number of things clear in our minds. First of all, when the Russians initially intervened, everyone said, oh, look at this pitiful force. It's too small for the mission. There aren't enough Russian troops. They don't know what they're doing. Well, they were half right. Putin had never intended to invade and strike all the way to the Dnieper River. I was one of those who was surprised, because I thought that the Russians would behave as historically they've done when it became clear they had no alternative. They would drive hell-bent for election deep into Ukrainian territory to try and rapidly encircle and destroy what was there. That didn't happen, because I don't think Putin accurately calculated the response he was going to get from the West. I think he was surprised at the enormous hostility and hatred that emitted from Washington, D.C. and other European capitals. So now they've got the force available that could take them all the way to the Polish border without question. But again, it's not really what he wants. The Russians don't want to rule the Ukrainians in the West. They know Ukrainians in the West are true Ukrainians. These people have never lost their sense of identity or their cultural foundation, their language. They are different from the Russians. The Russians don't want to be burdened with that. Everybody thinks, well, they want to restore the Warsaw Pact. Why? The Warsaw Pact was no great benefit by the time the thing fell apart to the Russians. Cuba is another example. It was a disaster, just an open black pit for Russian money and resources. So he doesn't want to do that. Everything is a function of, well, who's going to step forward and who's going to take ownership? Who's going to admit the war is over? That hasn't sorted itself out in the West yet. So between now and Christmas, I would suspect that he'll simply press to the Dnieper River. And that's a natural dividing line. That line will be seized. Then the next question is, who's going to negotiate an end to it? And if nobody comes forward and nobody's left, well, then you can cross the river and go into Kiev and decide what you want there for a government. The Russians will not accept a rump Ukraine as a member of NATO. Off the table. It's impossible. The Russians will not accept a government in Kiev that is incurably hostile to Russia. Why would they? In other words, no more platforms for attack against Russia. What they wanted was an Austrianized Ukraine, some sort of state that would be friendly with, but not necessarily hostile to Russia. In other words, it would not be part of a hostile alliance. I think they're going to get it, but we're not there yet. We'll just have to wait and see what it develops in Europe. In Washington, nothing will happen. I don't know if people realize it, but just take one look at Washington, D.C. It's paralyzed. It's paralyzed with a mix of arrogance, ignorance, and stupidity, in my judgment. They have failed consistently in every single important category of foreign and defense policy. The defense establishment is in ruins. We can't recruit for an army that can fight. We don't have the resources to send anywhere. We don't have any additional ammunition left. We have to replenish our own stocks. We have open borders. Millions of people have poured into the country. We don't know who they are, but they're increasingly an enormous economic burden. We have a failing economy and a deteriorating financial situation. Despite what you hear on the mainstream media, everybody says everything's great. Oh, there's a bull market. Well, let's all get in there. Forget it. Only a fool would do a thing like that. I remind people that in June of 1929, Secretary of the Treasury Mellon told the American people, "We live in an era of unbroken prosperity. There is nothing to fear." Meanwhile, he was liquidating all of his own stock holdings, investing heavily in gold and cash. And he wasn't the Lone Ranger. People lie. And the bunch in Washington is standing on a mountain of lies. Now they've taken this Israeli problem on, and they've done the worst possible thing. Instead of sitting down and saying to the Israelis, "Look, we're not in a position to fight a major regional war. We cannot promise you unconditional support. You're going to have to limit the scope of your operations. That may change in the future, but today, these are the limits." Nobody said that. We're back to what we told Zelensky. "You have the scientific, industrial, military power of the United States and NATO behind you. You are going to win. We will give you everything." I think that's what Mr. Netanyahu is also counting on. It's not going to happen.
Yeah, well, we can barely do one war, let alone two, and yet they tell the American people, "We're America. Of course we could do two. Yeah, bring on China." My God.
It's just monumental.
Yeah. So just a couple of days ago, I had General Michael Flynn on my show. He said one of the things he was investigating before the deep state made their move to remove him from the Trump cabinet, that there was an awful lot of money laundering happening from the Pentagon through military operations. The day before I interviewed him, the Pentagon failed an audit saying $3 trillion. $3 trillion is the amount of money that they bring in tax collections for American combined. So do you think there's any truth to what General Flynn is saying, or is it just hard to track money and weapons when you're in the heat of war?
Well, that's a great excuse. The next time I plan to go to war, I can forget about stealing money and plussing up my bank account. I don't know the details. I should not say such a thing if it were not true. So I impute credibility to his statement. I think he's on to something. But look.
And now a quick message from today's video sponsor, Morgan.
Okay, he's got a commercial inserted in here, and I'm going to try to skip over it if I can. But you got to love the delivery Colonel Douglas McGregor brings. He's like the adult in the room. You know what I mean? He's very reasoned, very rational, he very concise in his manner of thinking. He spells things out very plainly and on point. I mean, he's just such a refreshing voice you got all these car salesman type people out here just spewing just this happy face crap. I personally, okay, just me personally, I appreciate honesty, objectivity. Tell me like it is. You know, don't tell me fairy tales. Don't lie to me. Please. Let's be honest. Tell me like it is. This is what I like. I like that. Honesty. You know, don't complicate it with a bunch of nonsense. You know, don't tell me what you want me to think. Tell me the reality of the situation. That way I can have an informed point of view, an informed perspective. If you give me a lot of bunk, how am I supposed to have a valid opinion on things? Okay? Colonel Douglas McGregor brings pertinent, objective, true analysis. And that's invaluable in this day and age of smoke and mirrors and propaganda. It's just, like I say, personally, to me, it's so refreshing. I know a lot of people prefer good news. And that's only natural. You want to hear favorable, happy things. You know, I mean, I've never been to Disney World. You know, I've never been to what they call it, the Magic Mountain or whatever in Disney. I never had any interest to go. You know, my understanding is it's extremely expensive. And another thing you always hear about that place is there's this woke agenda, they call it. This woke agenda is pushed heavily on the Disney premises. But I'm not of that mind to be Disney-fied, to live in a world of illusion and fantasy and smoke and mirrors. I prefer the real world for crying out loud. Well, I grew up around honest, serious people. That's why I have a taste for that. You know, to be lied to and tricked and told fantasies, well, it ain't my bag. I think I prefer that. It's more pleasant. You know, it's more easy to live down, I guess. Okay, I got to try to. I think he's selling silver or gold or something like that. Okay, I'm going to click it right here, see what happens. That might be a good place to start. I'll go back here, see what happens.
Flick ones. I think the entire structure of our government has fallen apart. I don't realize how our government is at this point. The rest of the world looks at the old American brand. Powerful. There's no one that can challenge the United States. Its military is all powerful. It's this, that, and everything. Those days are over. That's 30 years ago. That's 1991. Today, everything has changed. We've had enormous demographic changes. We have enormous discontent inside our country with a whole range of people for very, very serious reasons. We don't have societal cohesion anymore. Go back and look at the days of Gulf War I. Look at the attitudes that people held at that point and how people reacted to what was happening, and then look what's going on now. The point I'm trying to make, and I've said this several times, the last thing the United States needs at this point in our history is a war of any kind. We have too much to do here at home. We're already spending $1 trillion plus every year now to service our enormous sovereign debt. You know, normally your creditors, and we have creditors, will come to you and say, look, it's obvious your head's underwater. You've got to cut spending. If you cut spending, we'll restructure your debt to enable you to pay it. That's what you do. That's what Franklin Roosevelt did in 32 and 34. He didn't call it a default. They called it restructuring the debt. Can we do that now? That's probably too late. Who holds most of the debt, internally and externally? Well, that's another lengthy explanation, but let's be frank. The Chinese, the Japanese, the British, other Europeans, they hold most of the debt. Do they ever really expect it to be paid back? I think they've reached a point now where they see no evidence that we will ever cut spending. So where are we headed? Steve, we're headed over the cliff. In fact, some people say we've already gone over. And it's only a matter of time until we hit the bottom. When you hit the bottom, that's when everything will change. But until then, people are going to keep doing what they've always done because they've gotten away with it. So I think General Flynn is right. And I think it's the tip of the proverbial iceberg.
Yeah. Wow. Oof. Some of this stuff gives me nightmares to read about.
Well, the bad news is most Americans are still not paying a great deal of attention. Most Americans think things can be handled or, you know, the government will fix it. I mean, my generation is in receipt of, you know, their retirement checks, pension funds, whatever savings they have. They're all settling in for a comfortable retirement. And I've tried to tell them what happens if the checks stop. What do people do when the food stamps stop? Oh, well, that will never happen. Gee, have we ever heard that before? That will never happen. I mean, Billy Mitchell predicted that the Japanese were the most likely candidate to bomb Pearl Harbor. He made that prediction originally in 1922. It was repeated subsequently. And people at times said, oh, well, that's ridiculous. Why would they ever do that? Well, we're in the same position now. We've grossly underestimated everything, and we're underestimating the Middle East. And this is the real danger that we confront there. Similar to what we did in Eastern Europe with the Russians. We underestimated the Russians. We decided they were weak and that we were far stronger than we are. We said their society would fragment. Ours is the one in trouble, not theirs. We said their economy would falter, but it's our economy that's in trouble, not theirs. I mean, we just go down the list. So I think we're doing something similar now in the Middle East, and I think it comes at great cost to Israel.
Yeah. But before we jump in there, I want to ask you something. This may be a little silly, but it's a big story in the news today. There's a retired colonel. I don't know if you know him or not. His name is Colonel Carl Nell. He came out today and said that the United States government, the CIA, and secret UFO programs need to come clean by 2030 and share their secret knowledge with each other in order to give the United States an advantage over the rest of the world before it's too late. Any idea who this guy is? Why is a retired colonel coming out and making it sound as if these different entities are all hiding UFO technology that would benefit the United States?
I really don't know.
You don't know him?
No, I assume he's an Air Force officer, but he could be an Army officer. I have no knowledge whatsoever of him. And by the way, you know, the entire discussion of aliens is very obtuse. I mean, I've seen plenty of evidence to suggest it's quite real. I've seen plenty of evidence to suggest it's absolutely nonsense. I am not in a position to judge any of it. So I don't know. But I've learned that a lot of things are probably true that we don't know. And so at some point, the truth will come out. Look, we're still arguing over the Kennedy.
Yeah.
I think there's a lot that we don't know. And I think once this government implodes, and I think it will, I think it's headed to rock bottom, we may discover some things. We may find out some things. But until it does, everything that you just mentioned is pure speculation.
Yeah. Okay. It was on the front page of the Daily Mail. You're a colonel. He's a colonel. I thought I would just throw it out there. Okay.
So we're not all electronically linked, you know.
Yeah. Okay. Couple of questions, and then I know you have to get off. Since the October attack on Israel, the U.S. military has had an increase in attacks in Iraq and in Syria. Do you think as the Israel-Gaza situation continues that the United States military bases and units will become increasingly under threat around the world?
Well, I don't know about around the world, but very definitely inside the Islamic world. When I was in the building and before I went into the building and I first interviewed with the president for another position, I warned about the situation in Turkey. I felt strongly that we should get our forces out of there. If you go back to 2003, you will remember that the Turks denied us access to moving our forces through Turkey into Iraq. And everyone was shocked. But nobody knows the truth or the historical record. When we first went in to Iraq, the Turks were apoplectic. They were apoplectic because the Turks, of course, regard the Iranians as a rival. They saw Saddam Hussein, for a whole range of reasons, as essentially a bulwark against Iran, one there and destabilize the country. And they knew, because Iraq is another artificial country. It's not a real country in the sense that we think of ourselves in Europe as nations. You could argue that we in the West, in the United States, are an artificial construct in many ways. We weren't always that way, but increasingly it looks that way. But that's not true. Iraq was drawn up.
Natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crip Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crip Rick's hyphen, thank you. Welcome to the Crypt.
Mountain High Time, 2 hours of an organization to the madness, discussing the ever-changing dynamics of being both physically and mentally prepared for a plethora of possible outcomes to our future and present. A look into the latest technologies, new scientific discoveries, and how they might be used in connecting the human domain and controlling it, ancient cultures and places. Be warned. This is an opinionated look through headlines. Guests that are not afraid to question the narrative. A little bit of crazy rants of a stoner conspiracy factist that pushes constitutional concepts. The place and the time are the same, another dimension we call Mountain High Time. Saturdays, 8 p.m. Eastern Time, 6 p.m. Mountain High Time. Right here on Revolution.radio, where information never sleeps and truth breaks the spell.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies to UFOs and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Any commercial advertising you may hear in this program is of the sole discretion and benefit of the host of this program you are listening to. Revolution Radio does not endorse any commercial products, nor does it accept monetary compensation for on-air advertising of commercial products, nor will it ever. Are and shall remain 100% listener supported. Any product advertising on this program are considered use or risk. Revolution Radio shall not be held liable for any claims or damages received from any product advertised within this program. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Well, thank you for listening to Revolution Radio. I'm your host this evening, sitting in for Keith AZ. He's under the weather. Hey, get better, Keith. Get well, my friend. Thanks for letting me sit in. I appreciate it, man. I really do. I think these issues are important to talk about, to bring to people's attention. I really do think they're important issues. I apologize in the first hour earlier this evening. My computer crashed. Skype actually crashed, and I couldn't get back on it to save my life. And a brand new computer, relatively new computer, you know, I seldom use it. It's a HP Windows 11. It's worked fine to this point. And the Skype just said, oh, no, no more of that. You know, luckily, I had this second computer here. I was able to come back on, but I'm hoping it was the feds being threatened by my speech. I'm hoping that, because I'd consider that extremely flattering. That they had issued what I was bringing to light in the context of the show. I'd like to think that's why they nuked it, but I don't know. It could have just been a technical issue with the computer, but very odd, very, very odd. You know, and again, like I mentioned earlier in the program, this week the WEF, World Economic Forum, is meeting in Davos, Switzerland. And at the top of their agenda is the issue of speech and squelching speech they find disruptive, disfavorable to their preferred narrative. They want to get rid of contrarian points of view. That's actually on their agenda this week in Davos, Switzerland. Now, famously, the United States is known for its free speech, freedom of religion, your freedom to express yourself, your freedom to have your own point of view and to express it. Famously, the United States is known for that. But in the last few years, I'm sure you're all aware that they've been exercising censorship in these United States, particularly in regard to the special injections that were so heavily pressed on the public. And many, many medical professionals, esteemed scientists and doctors, were talking about the danger of technology. And boy, they put the boot on those guys. I mean, it's been really something to see. Trying to silence the voices. You would think in a democracy, in a in a representative governance where debate is welcomed, where diverse opinions are allowed and heard out, you would think that we could have that discussion, that we could hear different points of view. That way we could come to an educated, reasoned perspective on these matters. But they've disallowed contrary talk. If I'm not mistaken, they don't even want to have presidential debates anymore betwixt the Republicans and the Democrats. They just want to have this election and not even debate. I believe the Republican Party candidates have been debating, but the alleged front runner isn't taking part in the debates. Although he's been on a campaign, this alleged front runner, ever since he was deposed, which is odd. I've never seen that before. In all my years, I've never seen such a thing. It's very odd. I would like to continue to listen to Douglas McGregor. I think I will. And if you're still with me, I guess you will too. But boy, he's just so refreshing to hear. Such a scholarly manner, such a matter-of-fact manner about him. Speaks with a confidence, with a surety. You know, I much prefer that to like a mealy mouth. Well, I'm not sure. Oh, no. Don't give me that. No. How about that? No. Have a point of view. Know what you think and why you think it. Well, I don't know. Learn to know. Discover and know. How about that? Try that. Put that on. See how it fits.
On up, along with Jordan and a number of other countries at the Versailles Peace Conference. So they said, look, he may not be perfect. The country is stable. We can do business with it. We can live with it. And he's focused primarily or proportionately on Iran. We ignored it. We went back in 2003 and did more damage. We created the Kurdish monster in many respects that now threatens or has been threatening Turkey for some time, despite Mr. Erdogan's best efforts to try and tame that. So the Turks look at us and say, you're nothing but trouble. You've caused us unending heartache. Same thing is true in most of the Arab countries. I think we need to understand that. And Americans, they don't. You know, we're back to this. So the Americans wear the white hats. We're the good guys. We come in, peace, love, and harmony burst out from every direction. No, it's not the case. So we need to get those troops out. Donald Trump wanted to get them out when I was there in November and December and early January. He wanted them out of Iraq. He wanted them out of Syria. And he was obstructed. He was obstructed by his own party on the Hill. He was obstructed by numerous lobbies. Because the argument was, well, we have to stay there because of the Iranian threat. Well, the Iranian threat was already in Iraq. The Iranians have been running the show there almost from November of 2003 until the present. We could never have had any modicum of stability in that country if the Iranians hadn't intervened with the Shiites in the south so that we could deal with the Sunnis in the middle by either buying them off with cash or killing them. So the whole thing has been a facade that's never there. We need to get out. Syria is another one. And our positions in these countries are, by any stretch of the imagination, illegal. The Iraqi parliament voted us out back in 2020, said, get out, leave our country. So much for our respect for democracy. We said, oh, sorry, can't do that. We're staying. Syria is another case. We are there illegally. There's nothing there that justifies our presence or control of this tiny oil spot that's up in the northeast of the country. And now we are viewed as unwanted aliens and potentially threatening, not just to the Iranians and the Iranian proxy of militias, but and the Turks. So we need to get out, but we won't get out. We'll stay, and things are going to get a lot worse. And it's going to be very difficult to rescue them. A friend of mine in the building gave me a good comparison. It's a bad, bad thought, but it worries me a great deal. Most of your viewers will not remember World War II, and Wake Island was this tiny island out in the vast Pacific. It was important to us for many reasons strategically, but it was indefensible. It was too small, couldn't possibly be defended. We wanted to get troops out, but we couldn't. So the Marines that were on Wake were lost. They were captured and went away. The same thing was true in the Philippines. We tried to get out of the Philippines through most of the 1930s. FDR actually empowered MacArthur with the president of the Philippines to make a deal for neutrality for the Philippines so that we could avoid a war with the Japanese in the event that they decided to seize the Philippines. All of these things failed. So we had 11,000 American soldiers captured on Bataan. We had 1,000 plus Marines and sailors captured on Wake Island. We have a history of this. This is not good. And once the enemy holds your soldiers, sailors, airmen, and Marines, what are you left to do? What's your answer? Global war? Total war? World war? Why wait for the inevitable to occur? So I think we should get out of all of these places, but I hold the minority opinion.
Yeah. Oof. Okay, just a couple more questions, then we'll get you out. I appreciate your time. Saudi Arabia has called for an end to the carnage happening in Gaza. Prince Mohammed bin Salman has said if Israel doesn't stop these illegal attacks on Palestine and Gaza, that he will wake up the Middle East against Israel. Is this a credible threat? What are your thoughts on his comments?
I think they've already begun the wake-up call. So I absolutely see this. Now, the Saudis and the Emirates, Egypt in particular, several other North African countries, they have a weapon at their disposal in terms of oil and gas. In the case of Saudi Arabia, it has the weapon known as the U.S. Treasuries. If it simply dumps all of the treasuries it holds, that could start a fire sale here because our banks hold vast quantities of these treasuries that were bought. Rates were very, very low that now have really no value. If those things begin, that's going to have a huge impact here. But from a military standpoint, the one actor in the region that should be taken very seriously is Mr. Erdogan in Turkey. And I wish people would look at the remarks that he's made over the last couple of weeks. And he said several things that everyone should listen to this man. He is not hot air. He's real. He leads the Muslim Brotherhood in the Middle East. He leads it in North America. He is a believer. He is quite serious. And he said recently, speaking directly to Netanyahu, you, Mr. Netanyahu, are finished. You're gone. We are not talking to you anymore. It's over. Then he said, you, Mr. Netanyahu, are quick to threaten others in the region with your nuclear power. Let me be clear, all the nuclear weapons at your disposal will not rescue you. You will not survive this. And then he said, at some point, Turkish soldiers will fight in Gaza. Now, those need to be combined with what the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia said, because you're looking at two sides of the same coin. One kind is military power. The other coin is primarily economic. You have the Suez Canal. You've got the Straits of Hormuz. What does it take to shut them down and block them? Not a great deal. And then you have Iran. Iran is not like Turkey. Its population is not violently anti-Israeli. It isn't. It's very upset by what's happening. But the Iranians are much more moderate in their views. Unfortunately, though, the Iranians know that if they are to be taken seriously in the region and by the Islamic world, they have to take Gaza very seriously, and they've done that. They have an enormous arsenal of tactical theater ballistic missiles, as well as cruise missiles and unmanned systems. They have enough of them ready to shoot, ready to launch, that they could destroy much of Israel's urban brain. In other words, its cities. We haven't even discussed the Turks yet. I'm talking about Iran. The biggest mistake we could make would be to attack Iran. And pointing to Iran and blaming them for what happens in Iraq and Syria is infantile. Those militias want us out of their countries. That's what it's about. Get out. You're not wanted. And the people that have been working to bring on a war with Iran for over a decade are saying everything they possibly can once again to indict Iran and provoke a war with it. We remember President Trump went through this in 2019. You had Bolton at the time and Pompeo, McKenzie and CENTCOM. All these people are, well, it's Iran, it's Iran, it's Iran. We literally set them up to shoot down the Global Hawk and then said, that's it. And oh, by the way, Mr. President, we have the strike packages ready to go. And President Trump said two things. First of all, how many people did we kill with the Global Hawk? Well, of course, none. It's unmanned. And there was no pilot. Oh, well, then what happens after we launch the strikes? What a great question. What happens if we land troops in South Vietnam? Well, we'll see what happens. We're going in. We're going to march in. We're going to do these things because it's the right thing to do. This is the problem. This is the threat to the United States. The existential threat to our country and our society is no afterthought, impulse, emotion, passion. There is no strategic reason for direct combat between ourselves and Iran. Neither is there any reason between ourselves and Russia or between ourselves and China. We are in other people's countries, in other people's neighborhoods, trying to dictate outcomes. That's over. We are not the great superpower of 91, and they have all recovered and become infinitely more powerful economically, militarily over the last 30 years. We need to understand that however much we want to be, we are no longer the center of the universe. We are not the sole sun in this galaxy. We don't seem to want to come to terms with that, Stephen.
Yeah.
And that's our great problem right now.
Yeah. Oof. I know you got to go.
Boy, I like the way he talks. He instills confidence in the things he's bringing to bear, in the information he brings. He makes it utterly believable. It's just such a delight to have somebody who manifests that kind of credibility, who's getting some airtime. It's just, I appreciate it. I deeply appreciate it that he's there and he speaks. Well, again, if you're familiar with my little presentation I bring, my little apocalyptic 121 presentation, I'm Darren, I'm the host. If you're familiar with it, I tend to not let a week go by where I don't talk about the genocidal injections, the fatal injections. I can't leave it alone. I don't want people to forget about it. I think it's such a huge event. It's so catastrophic and monumental and apocalyptic in of itself. I just will not let it go. The excess deaths, the sudden deaths, people disabled, chronically ill as a result of these injections, people dropping dead in sports, Hollywood, children dying, suddenly dropping dead, heart failure, things that historically didn't happen are happening in great quantity. Now, since the rollout of these special injections, these special shots, And I just can't let a week go by without bringing it up, because I don't want people to turn away. I don't want people to look somewhere else and forget, develop some amnesia about these things. It's so important what has happened. It's such a massive event that we're in the midst of it. You know, I mean, it's not happy news. It doesn't bring me delight, but I can't ignore it. I can't act like it isn't happening. I can't believe the numbers of people that went along with this. It's such a heartbreaker. It's such a disappointment. The people that this happened to them, it really breaks my heart. I you know, and I'm powerless to uninject them. But the point of the whole thing is these people that are doing all this killing and creating all this unrest and destabilization throughout the world, not just in the United States, throughout the world. These people are ruthless. They're absolutely ruthless. And, you know, it's hard to get your mind around the sheer lack of conscience and lack of morality that these people possess that have done these things and are engaged in these things presently, destroying our environment with their chemicals, what they're doing to our foods and our waters. But they don't stop. I mean, you want to talk about invasive. It doesn't get much more invasive than actually injecting people with poison. I mean, how much farther can you go? I guess a bullet. I guess that would be all the more invasive. But on this subject, there's a guy I've featured before. He's written a book. He does a lot of interviews. His name is Ed Dowd. Ed's a former BlackRock executive. Worked in the markets, hedge funds. Very good with numbers. He's been watching internationally, he's been watching all over the world the death rates, looking at the insurance companies and the government reports on death rates, going back several years, comparing them to what's happened since the rollout of these shots. He makes the case that it's exactly what it appears to be. It's a depopulation agenda. Thinning the herd. Culling the herd. Bringing an end to many people. Deliberately. Not accidentally. It's very unsettling. I take no joy I take no satisfaction in the fact that there are some very ruthless people who hold great power in this earth. It's unconscionable. It's unlike anything a normal person would imagine. Most of us want only the best for our families, our communities, our nations. We don't think along these lines. We don't possess that kind of hate and animus for our fellow man. I think most of us, I speak for myself, I want the best for people. All people. That's when I see someone doing well, I'm happy for them. Good for you. When I see somebody suffering, I want them to get past it. I want them to be better. I want that to go away. I want for them to have a better condition. I don't revel in others' misery whatsoever. I want a good world for all of us. Not everybody shares my point of view. Is actually an element of a diabolical nature that's alive and well in this earth. And my plea is that you're aware of that. Throw off that naivete. Throw off that gullibility and that naivete. It's dangerous. Acquire some awareness. That's my plea. Exercise some objective thought. Think for yourself. Quit being manipulated. Please. For goodness sake. Ignorance is not bliss. Ignorance is downright dangerous.
Now they have one that's buy one, get one free. But I wanted to talk to you about excess deaths, where we're sitting at right now. I know that there has been excess deaths over the last few years, which you can talk about too, but what are we going to be looking at going into 2024?
Yeah, so excess deaths, as you stated correctly, have been with us since, especially amongst younger age groups. There was excess deaths in 2020, about 500,000 in the U.S. due to COVID, and now it's coming out maybe potentially suppression of early treatment. So it's mostly older folks who die.
What's the number you said? 400,000?
500,000 in the U.S. in 2020. It was old. And then in 2021, with the vaccine, concurrent with the vaccination rollout, we had a mix shift to younger age folks. So I've been focusing on millennials. They're not supposed to die excessively. You know, they're young, and that's not something that's supposed to happen. And so in the U.S., in 2021, it was around 37% excess deaths for millennials, 25 through 44 age group. And then in 2022, it was around 21%. And for 23, it's looking around 10%. That's total U.S. population. The problem is that the Society of Actuaries also tracks these numbers, and that's a subset of the U.S. population. And for millennials this year, they saw in Q1, 12% excess death, then in Q2, 18%, and then in Q3, I have the inside scoop, the numbers, 23%. So that's going to be higher than the general U.S. population. That means people are employed and mostly mandated to take these. So the problem is that I see excess deaths continuing in 2024. Depending on the country, the UK is running higher. It's all over the map. Australia is running around 10%. So I think 10 to 15% excess deaths in millennials is probably about right, unfortunately. So it's getting better, but it's still with us, and it should not be with us. I believe it's obviously the vaccines, and it suggests there's potentially some medium-term effects from the jabs, if I'm correct. My naysayers give a whole bunch of other reasons, but until I hear a better excuse, this is what I'm going with.
So when you say 10%, how would you, it's 10% of what? 10% more than what deaths should have occurred?
Yeah, so deaths are very predictable things. And the insurance industry knows this. That's why they issue what's called group life insurance policies for individuals that work at Fortune 500 and mid-sized companies. Generally speaking, it's a benefit you get when you sign on board to a company. And if you die, your spouse or your parents or whoever you make the beneficiary gets one or two times your salary. It's not underwritten, meaning they don't do a medical, they just give it to you for free without knowing your health. Those rates are very predictable. So 10% excess death is about a three standard deviation event, meaning it's a signal. It's not normal. It's above. It only happens 0.3% of the time statistically. So, and it's also, as stated by Scott Davison in 2022, 10% excess deaths is a once in a 200 year flood. At the time, they were seeing 40%, especially amongst millennials. So in the millennial cohort in group life in 2020, when they were 40%, they're running around 15% in that specific subset. The general U.S. population is running around 10 for millennials.
And that's because they didn't all get the vaccine, in your opinion.
In my opinion, it's lower than those who are employed, because you had a choice. If you're employed, you didn't have a choice.
So what would 10% equate to for 2024? Let's say we stay on track. How many people are going to die that shouldn't?
I'd have to go do the math. I haven't done the math, but you know, we experienced 60,000 millennial deaths between March of 2021 and February of 2022. That was 40% excess deaths. So 60,000, probably 15 to 20,000 excess deaths in the millennial group this year.
Okay.
And you know, 60,000 is Vietnam War. 20,000 is you know, a full rock concert stadium.
But that's also just the millennials, right?
Just the millennials. And I focus on them because they're not supposed to die.
They're not supposed to die. But how many, you know, I just had somebody who was 26, I know, died. So there's kids that are younger than millennials, you know, that are Generation Y or whatever's after that, that are dying.
Yeah, let me check in my database here. I'll just have it open. Lower than 25. Yeah, so this is interesting. So in 2020, there were 10% excess deaths in 0 to 25 in the U.S. There were 21% in 21, 21% again in 22, and 23 is running at 16.8, called 17%. So younger folks are dying at a higher rate. The young, below the millennials, Gen Z? Gen Z seems to be experiencing a similar sort of problem.
Now, is that because they shouldn't be dying from anything? I mean, we know COVID didn't affect them. They just don't die from this stuff. So any excess deaths, it starts to be a higher percentage.
Yeah, and deaths in that age group tend to be accidental. One of the smoking guns I found in my book, okay, they didn't start vaccinating ages 1 through 14 until November of 21. And their excess deaths were actually below normal because of the lockdowns and the closures. So there was less movement. So less movement and, you know, creates less opportunity to die accidentally. So, but then when the vaccines rolled out, their excess deaths started to rise. And then in 22 and 23, it's off the charts. So, you know, they shouldn't be dying. And let's say I'm wrong about the vaccine. No one really cares about this phenomenon from the mainstream media or health officials. So that's why I point to the vaccine, because no one wants to talk about this. I mean, this is something not even discussed.
Well, they keep pushing it. I mean, in my area, I'm doctors are still recommending it to people. So they haven't gotten the message, or they don't care. I think there's incompetence there and bigger issues if somebody doesn't, if somebody's still recommending it. I think you should get a new doctor. Okay, but what are we doing? What are you hearing? Because I know you hear, you talk to a lot of people. You talk to attorneys. You talk to AGs from different states. I know you talk to a lot of different people. I had Ladapo on a couple weeks ago, and we talked about the fact that there's going to be a ton of lawsuits going against the mRNA producers, and he thinks they're in trouble. What do you think?
I agree with him. I've spoken with Joe, and he's a good man. And, you know, so he recently came out and publicly stated for the removal of all these vaccines. They're killing people. So it's good. That's a public official. We have Ken Paxton in Texas suing Pfizer for fraud. I think you're going to see more and more states' attorney generals come on board, because what's going to happen is not only we talk about deaths a lot, but there's a, you know, way more disabilities. And as tragic as deaths are, economically, they're worse for a state. So the state disability rolls are rising. And just like in the tobacco wars, when people were dying from lung cancer and started to affect the state budgets, this is going to start to work its way through the system. And I suspect we're going to see more states sign on board to these types of lawsuits. Good news about a state's attorney general is I believe they have an easier path towards discovery. A lot of individual lawsuits have a hard time getting discovery. This is going to potentially open the kimono, and we'll see, you know, what went on behind the scenes. And, you know, at this point, you know, we've done so much research, my team and I at Finance Technologies, we have laid out an analyst mosaic, just pieces of evidence showing that the clinical trials were a joke, and they should have stopped them due to safety signals.
That's
then,
right.
But they didn't. They kept rolling.
That's right. I mean, if you read that, they were trying to hide the Pfizer documents for 75 years, for crying out loud.
Right.
So that's what's coming down the pike. Do you foresee there being any justice, or are they just going to work like mad to sweep this under the rug?
Well, it depends on the consciousness of the American people and the other people in the different countries. If they get irate about this, which they should, like super angry, but not angry to the point of violence, they can affect change through the politicians. The politicians, as we know, if they sense there's a wind shifting, they will throw all these people under the bus. And I think that's coming. It just takes more and more people, you know, watching shows like yours to just wake up to the fact they were duped. Most people honestly didn't really think that this was a problem, because they trusted. And once they realize their trust has been broken in a massive way, I think we're going to see a change. But, you know, I think 2024 is the year of a mass awakening to this issue. I mean, it really started percolating in, at the end of 21 into 22. I think what I'm seeing on Twitter and in the news and people like Joe and Ken Paxton, it's only going to snowball from here. And more mainstream media people, I know Megyn Kelly has come out, said she's vaccine injured. And, you know, we're going to see more and more of this. People are going to stop towing the line. And I think the reckoning, the beginnings of the reckoning come this year. Take, you know, 5 years before Pfizer goes bankrupt.
Well, do you think, you know, Pfizer going bankrupt, as you know, you've done a ton of research. Pfizer is the only culprit.
No. The government, the doctors, the hospital system, the media. I mean, this is gonna affect trust in so many institutions. There has to be kind of a basic, you know, almost like a peaceful raising of these institutions and a rebuilding from the ground up. I mean, the FDA, the CDC, you got to fire everybody and rehire.
That's right. Or wonder what we're doing with the way the organizations are. I mean, totally revamp them, because if we got into a situation where these people were this inept and still pushing, I mean, that's crimes against humanity at some point. At what point are they to blame for being inept and then not stepping away? You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. So we're at the point my book at the end of 22, when I wrote it, I said they see the health officials and global governments see the same data I see, and
that's
that
right.
They're, and so I called it a cover-up. So we're in, forget about the who and the why and how it happened. We're in cover-up mode, which is sometimes a bigger crime. And it's much like I saw in corporate America with fraud, you know, Enron fraud. By the time it came out that there was fraud, the stock was zero. And I know Enron CEO and CFO were whispering in big investors' ears, everything's fine, lying all the way down. Then they went bankrupt, still were lying until they were in handcuffs. So there's kind of this psychopaths do this. They have to pretend everything's fine until they're actually in handcuffs. So the reason why they're still pushing this is they can't say, oops, it's not suitable for young children, because if they do, then it questions the whole daisy chain. So they're going to pretend until they're literally almost fired or in jail.
Like you're right. Now, do you think that the pushback, some of the things that we're going to see, because everything's kind of coming down, right? The public is waking up to all sorts of things. In their process of always having to look innocent until they're absolutely guilty, until they're in cuffs, are you seeing them, are they going to do some things that a cornered rat would do, like just unbelievable things? They fight back in ways that are irrational, and we're just going to see more of that?
You know, like this is such a violation of trust, and you know, it questions, you know, the authority of global governments. So, and there's a financial problem going on with the debt bubble. I think we're going to see wars, you know, cyber shutdowns, you know, with being blamed on Iran and Russia. There's going to be all sorts of issues to distract the fact that we were all, you know, forced to do this and collectively poisoned. So, that's if I'm a rat, that's what I would do. I'd create distractions, war. You know, this is the classic how to wipe something off the map is do this. And what was interesting is the consciousness of the vaccine issue was starting to come about in 2022 or 2021, and then they launched the Ukraine war, and that kind of took the vaccine issue out of the news for a while. I don't think they're going to be able to hide it, because word is really spreading. Anecdotally, you know, you go back 2-3 years, I was crazy by my friend group. Now they're, you know, half of them are telling me, thanks for exposing this. The other half don't want to talk about it because they're still in the cognitive dissonance, but they are not taking any more boosters. So the winds are changing here, and it's unfortunate that it has to be a grassroots efforts with people like you and others getting the word out, rather than our own watchdogs, the watchdogs that we created to make sure this doesn't happen. It's people like you and me rather than them.
Well,
that's the tragedy.
Yeah, it's a total tragedy. So look at these watchdogs, because they weren't just watchdogs. They were part of it. It was like they are the Trojan horse. You know, they come in, yeah. We all trust them, and then they do this to us.
Yeah, you know, I it's a similar situation to the great financial crisis. The rating agencies were supposedly the independent third party watchdogs of credit. And then they became corrupted by the money in issuing all these bogus bonds and slapping AAA credit ratings on them when they shouldn't have. So once you corrupt the independent third party trusted agent, lots of bad things happen. The FDA has been corrupted for a long time, the CDC. So all these people, listen, and it's not just money this time. This is lives and quality of life. So something needs to be done.
If you've been paying attention, you know the global economy is...
Whoop, looks like she's got another commercial. So I'm going to try to jump over the commercial. Because, you know, we don't want to hear that. But what do you think of Ed Dowd? Ed Dowd, again, is a sincere, knowledgeable fellow. He's not like one of these bureaucrats, one of these car salesman type guys. He's a sincere, concerned person telling you what he sees. A Wall Street professional, a man good with numbers. He's been very responsible over the course of his life, and he knows what he's talking about. It's refreshing to hear somebody speak honestly and frankly about these matters. It is to me.
I without going there. Okay, let's talk about what the heck is going on with the economy. Because we're looking at, we knew the WEF was trying to do a massive reset based on COVID, right? They were open about it. They had you probably saw it, the big circle with COVID being in the center and how they're going to reset everything based on COVID. They had that out, right after in 2020, right after it came out, which was incredible. But they want to do a reset, and it's more than just economic, but a lot of it's economic, and people are very concerned. So what do you see as happening? We had some, the Weiss Group, who's very respected, are seeing over 1,000 banks that are going to imminently collapse. What do you think?
So let's go back a little lesson. We had the great financial crisis in 2008-09. I was there. I saw it go down. And the powers that be decided to fix the problem, which was a debt problem, they would issue more debt. So right after that financial crisis, central bankers went off printing and buying bad bonds. Politicians spent like drunken sailors. And, you go forward to 2019, it was all going to come on then. But then mysteriously and miraculously, COVID comes along and gives the central bankers an excuse to print more money. And they, in my personal belief is the system, which started in, 1913 with the Federal Reserve, is kind of at the end of its game. And, we're the world reserve currency. The system needs constant credit creation. COVID gave them an excuse to create more credit, but it also brought inflation. They tried to curb inflation, raise interest rates. And money supply, as measured by M2 year-over-year growth, went negative in November of 2022. So when inflation whipsaw up, then they raise interest rates, and then money supply cratered, which is credit. We haven't seen that since 1930. And there's usually an 18-month lag on the full effects on the economy, which will be 18 months from November of 22 is May of this new year. But what did we see in March last year? We saw bank failures, right? Big, big bank failures. The Federal Reserve, they put their finger in the dike. And they created what's called the Bank Term Lending Program. And because of that, they're losing money now. The Federal Reserve is losing money on their balance sheet because of that program. That slowed it down. It didn't eliminate the problem. The banks still have their upside down. They have loans on their books at 2-3%, 14 years of zero interest rates. And they have depositors wanting more money for their savings but they're not able to raise the deposit rate. So that's why people are taking the money out of the bank and buying a T-bill or going to a money market fund. And so that's called disintermediation. That's why banks were starting to fail. So the Fed put their finger in the dike. I think there's going to be a lot of bank failures over the course of the next 2 years is my guess. And the real economy is in the tank. The government papered that over with spending. Most of the new job creation has been government jobs. And so the fourth quarter GDP was 4.something%. But if you X out all the government transfers, it was -1%. So we have the government, the Biden administration, trying to keep this thing together going into an election year. I think it's going to unravel in the next 6 months. And it's already unraveling. I mean, real people feel it. They're losing jobs.
Yep.
The inflation's killing them. But the main thing is saying everything's okay because the stock market is still hovering up there near all-time highs. That will shift soon. I wouldn't worry about that. And then we're going to get, a response from the Federal Reserve and the big politicians when this economic downturn really gets in here.
Well, gosh, the people are going to be so angry the media is lying to them about the COVID, the shots, and people are dying. They're lying to them about the economy. And then when the economy falls, people are going to be suffering like crazy. I mean, at what point do people turn against the media and say, I mean, why are they even listening to them anymore? I mean, at what point do they turn against them completely?
Well, the good news is the COVID situation woke up a lot of slumbering Americans who became aware that something was off. And as we roll time, more and more people are waking up. The problem is the mainstream media still has a lock on what I call low information voters or
That's
citizens.
Right. Yeah.
And so these people still are probably north of 50%. But as time goes on, once we get more and more of them to realize that something's really off and it has been for a while, then it all changes. I think we're slowly approaching that. I call it a tipping point. It's like capital markets. There's always tipping points.
And so we're at close to that tipping point. It's just that it'll be very interesting to see what the people do, because once the mob wakes up, it gets kind of scary. Now, with the CBDCs, I've had Andy Shechtman on my show, and he's famous for talking about bringing forward. He talked about it years ago, but then he started talking about a year ago how they're going to actually cram CBDs. This is his theory, is when all these banks collapse, they'll do a formal collapse. I just want to hear your thoughts on this. This is his theory. They're going to formal collapse, and then in order to get your money, they're going to force you to take the CBDC. Now a lot of other people are talking about it as well. I've heard public officials talk about that could happen. Do you think that could happen? And are they ready enough to do the CBDC? Because some engineers are like, no way, they can't do this. But what do you think?
I think it's going to be a hybrid system, and I do agree that you can't introduce a CBDC without a crisis, and the crisis is coming. So when did you implement a CBDC? You do it at the bottom of a crisis, and then because people are in fear, so they think they want the government to save them. So I think that's going to be bandied about in the midst of the crisis that's coming. And I think because they can't, technologically, they can't do it and just blank out your bank account and give you a CBDC. I think there'll be so many unemployed people, they'll offer universal basic income, but the catch is it has to be a CBDC. You have to tie it to a CBDC. So that's how they're going to start to move it, is my guess.
You think it'll almost be a tiered system, like the poor people and the people who are down and out because of the economy? It could be anybody. It could be a wealthy person that loses everything, but it's still the people who are in poverty and dire straits are the ones who are going to be forced on this first. But do you think they'll have, how is the process going to work to get the rest of us? I mean, that's an opportunity for the rest of us who are prepared to push back and to say no way.
Yeah, I think there's going to be a lot of consternation and change in this country and other countries. So this is the fight. The fight is, the CBDC, in my humble opinion, is a way to enslave everybody for bureaucratic dictates. So, for instance, right now they can't tell you to stop eating meat, but if they control your money and they can shut down your ability to purchase meat because everything is tied, your credit cards are tied to the CBDC. So, you go to a grocery store and you buy your meat and it's above the quota, whatever they determine the quota is, the cash register person doesn't have the ability to transact at that level. That's the goal. The goal is total control over every choice you make. The CBDC is a step towards that. That's why I'm so against it.
And that's right.
Personally, I use cash for everything I can, restaurants, groceries. I try not to use credit cards.
Well, I had an interview way pre-COVID, probably in 2016, with an indigenous group. And actually, it was a woman whose families and leadership and different tribes and stuff. And she was talking about how in the 90s, they were chipping certain groups of indigenous people for tracking. So their banks and everything were on this chip, and they had to have money in order to get health care and all this. And they made them do this for a period of time. And she was saying they do a lot of testing in those groups. And then she couldn't come back on my show because her life was threatened and everything else. So that was it with that. But that really makes you wonder. I mean, that is exactly what you're talking about.
Yeah. That's a CBDC is enslavement, in my personal opinion. I don't want to hear all the fluffy stories about how it's going to be easier for our lives. This is where it goes. That's where it ends up. I mean, no bureaucrat would want it's a bureaucrat's, technocrat's, I'll use the term wet dream. That's exactly.
Coming close to the end of the show. Thanks again, Keith, for letting me fill in for you. I really appreciate that. In the event you're unaware, a CBDC is a central bank digital currency, much like cryptocurrency. Central bank digital currency. They're talking a lot about it these days. Thank you very much. Stay warm. It's cold out there, my friends. Take care.
Natural law. Do you enjoy interviews with amazing guests? Then join Crypt Rick every Monday night, 6 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here on Revolution Radio. Studio A, freedomslips.com. Crypt Rick's iPhone banker. Welcome to the Crypt.
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Listen to Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
Interrupt your normally scheduled programming to bring you this important broadcasting announcement.
Now is the time to explore your greatest potential, embracing truth, health, and wellness while discarding the system and exposing its corruption. Experience true freedom.